Welcome back to the second half of Earth Matters on KURU 89.1 FM in Silver City. I'm your host for today's show, Donna Stevens of the Upper Gila Watershed Alliance, and I am talking with attorney Cindy Toole, who works for a nonprofit called Western Watersheds Project. In the first half of the show, we talked about the ecological impacts of livestock grazing on public lands in the American West, and also about the net economic loss that grazing represents. I want to ask you now about the issue of grazing and wildfires. I mean, here in New Mexico, we have our two largest wildfires ever recorded. And we've heard people talk about how reduced grazing leads to larger wildfires. What's your response to this, Cindy?
So this is based in the myth that grazing prevents blazing. And to that, first, I want to say, you know, I have a lot of empathy and sympathy for the folks who are directly impacted by these fires. But when it comes to how livestock grazing and fire interact, and whether or not livestock can reduce the impacts or the incidence of wildfire, I would say that the amount of vegetation, including grasses and forbs, that would have to be removed by livestock to prevent or reduce wildfires is essentially all of it. You would have to graze it down to nothing. I'd also point out that paving prevents blazing. Clear cuts prevent blazing in the short term. Fires are less common in areas that don't have vegetation, but that's not how we want to manage our federal public lands, especially our Forest Service lands. And the truth is that livestock grazing actually increases the risk of fire because of the invasive plants, especially grasses, which tend to be more fire prone. They displace the native plants, they burn hotter than native plants, and they spread fire more easily. Invasive grasses recover more quickly after a fire, often because they are better fire adapted than the native grasses are. And paradoxically, livestock grazing can change fire regimes, reducing fire frequency in those areas that are heavily overgrazed, as much of New Mexico was from the 1400s on. This can allow our ponderosa pine forest to become overgrown with small, immature trees that catch fire easily. They act as ladder fuels to catch the taller, old-growth canopies on fire. And in the absence of grazing, those lower-intensity fires would have moved through the understory, leaving the older trees intact and thinning the younger, smaller trees. That prevents those doghair thickets that are common today. Livestock grazing also reduces the amount of ground cover, which reduces the amount of water in the soil, which makes our forests more prone to fire.
Thank you for explaining that and kind of busting a common myth. I want to turn now, I just want to add one thing, which is that years ago, there was a fire burning in the Gila National Forest, and it was a very low intensity fire, which the Forest Service was just monitoring, but they weren't fighting it because there was no human infrastructure threatened. And I was able to walk right up to that fire, you know, like a foot away from it, because it was a low fire that was burning through grass and, cleaning a cool fire, so to speak, that was kind of cleaning the forest floor and never got up into the canopies, which I think is what you're saying, that if we have adequate grass and ground cover, we could have a low intensity fire.
That's exactly right.
So I want to turn to talking about politics, always an interesting issue. I've really been curious for a long time about the political clout that public ranchers have, considering how few of them there are. Can you address this issue?
I can. And unfortunately for a lot of wildlife, the livestock industry is really well organized. They have lobbyists and organizations such as the New Mexico Cattle Growers and the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. County commissioners are often also ranchers or the family members of ranchers. These folks work really hard to protect their income stream, and they exert their political influence through donations to political campaigns and lobbying efforts at the state, local, and national level. They are extremely well organized, and we have to remember that this is a commercial activity. It's the livestock grazing industry, and their lobbyists are protecting their industry. So as maybe one example of the influence the livestock industry has in New Mexico, I can point to the recent appointment of Greg Fulfer. He's the newest New Mexico Department of Game and Fish State Game Commissioner. The commission's required to have no more than 4 commissioners from the same political party, and they needed a Republican. So the governor recently appointed Mr. Fulfer, who is a former Republican state senator. He represents Eddy and Leah counties, but he was not a wildlife conservationist. He doesn't have any prior knowledge of the workings of the New Mexico Department of Game and Fish, and he's a rancher and an oil man. So he was recently quoted in the Albuquerque Journal as saying, "Ranching is a big part of my life," noting that he raises beef cattle. He thinks maintaining livestock infrastructure means he's taking care of the land for birds and quail, and he completely ignores the negative impacts of livestock and its infrastructure on wildlife. He voted against a law that funded Game and Fish to work with the Transportation Department on a Wildlife Corridors Action Plan, and he also voted against a wildlife trafficking law and a law that banned coyote killing contests. So wildlife is not his priority, yet he is now a commissioner for a wildlife agency. I can also provide an example from Arizona. Earlier, I mentioned the EKIP program that provides subsidies to ranchers for fences and livestock waters. Well, that program started as part of the Federal Agricultural Improvement and Reform Act of 1996. Public lands ranchers were specifically not allowed to receive the funds, in part because of the sweetheart deal they get with that low $1.35 per cow-calf pair grazing fee. But after an extended drought in Arizona, the Tonto National Forest ordered the grazing permittees to remove most of their cows in 2002. Our governor got very upset about this, Governor Jane Hall at the time. She asked then-President George W. Bush's Secretary of Agriculture to declare all of Arizona a drought disaster area. And this was just days before Congress passed the 2002 Farm Bill. And that Farm Bill revised the EKIP program to change the definition of eligible lands, which, long story short, allowed the ranchers on public lands to then get those funds for the drought contingency. So there's a lot of layers of political influence on grazing authorizations, wildlife manipulations, and funding sources.
Okay, thank you for that explanation, Cindy. Another issue, is related to land managers at agencies such as the Forest Service and the Bureau of Land Management. So, I mean, I recognize that there are good people at these agencies who genuinely care about the health of our land. What prevents some of these concerned individuals from making substantive changes to grazing policy? How are politics involved in this?
I think the first obstacle doesn't have much to do with politics, but it's their point of view. I was recently out in the field with some Forest Service folks, and we were looking at a heavily overgrazed section of land. And I saw it as overgrazed because there was no grass, there was no grass growing above maybe an inch above the ground. It should have been about 12 to 15 inches high. I saw that as overgrazed, but the Forest Service guy saw it from a grazing perspective where there was still lots of grass that could grow next year. I pointed out that there was no place for birds or insects to hide, no food for wildlife, and he pointed out, but there will be some for next year. So there are good folks there, but they have a different point of view, and wildlife isn't always at the front of their thought process. But then coming to the political side, the first obstacle is that regulations for managing public lands are made at the federal level. So the forest level folks don't have the power to change the laws, and they're usually pretty careful about speaking out against any changes to federal regulations. There are some folks who do try to change that system from within, and there's one gentleman named Robert Goose Gosnell. He worked for Wildlife Services in New Mexico. He was the state director of this program called the Animal Plant Health Inspection Service, or APHIS. Wildlife Services is a federal agency that kills a lot of wildlife for the benefit of public lands ranchers, agricultural interests, and other commercial enterprises. They kill millions of animals each year. So part of Mr. Gosnell's job as a state director was to oversee wildlife depredation report investigations. A depredation report is something that's created when a livestock permittee tells a federal agency that a predator has killed their cow or calf. Once that report is made by a livestock permittee, Wildlife Services will investigate and they'll try to determine which type of animal killed the livestock or if it died of natural causes, which happens more often than not. Wolves, bears, coyotes, cougars, those are the predators that are usually accused of doing the kill or the depredation. If a Mexican gray wolf is convicted of, through these reports and investigations of killing livestock, as I mentioned earlier, it can be removed by the Fish and Wildlife Service, and sometimes it's killed, either accidentally or intentionally. So this Wildlife Services director from New Mexico, he came into this program, and he says that he inherited an entrenched and systemic corporate corruption problem when it comes to the depredation investigations and determinations. He told a reporter named Spencer Roberts that he knew some of the depredation reports that caused Mexican gray wolf removals were illegal, that they were totally inappropriate. Mr. Gosnell explained that the inspectors had been instructed by superiors to confirm the livestock loss incidents as wolf kills for ranchers. They were told, no matter what the facts say, this is the outcome. Mr. Gosnell said his guys in the field were going and rubber stamping anything the ranchers asked them to do. He described how many of the investigators also worked second jobs as hunting guides for the same ranchers whose claims they were evaluating. This is a violation of federal ethics codes. So in addition to these rubber stamps, they had other ethics violations. So when Mr. Gosnell took over for APHIS in New Mexico, he had been warned that there were problems, that there were internal communications showing that Fish and Wildlife Service employees weren't allowed to look over the depredation reports. There was no oversight of the program. And then when they were allowed to review the depredation reports, they found that the investigators were confirming wolf kills in error at an extremely high rate. So Mr. Gosnell tried to reform the agency from within while he was there, but in doing so, he faced retaliation. He asked experienced livestock depredation investigators from other states to review those from New Mexico. And he told the reporter that investigated this issue that everybody that looked over the report said those are not wolf kills. The ones that were confirmed as wolf kills were not actually wolf kills based on the evidence. And then that caused trouble for him. A regional director, his superior, pulled him aside at a conference and told him to back off of his investigation. And he let Mr. Gosnell know that there was an arrangement between federal APHIS administrator Ken Shea and the New Mexico Secretary of Agriculture, Jeff Witt, and he was interfering with that arrangement. Mr. Gosnell filed a complaint with the Office of Inspector General with reporting these ethics violations and improper investigation results. He was disciplined, transferred out of New Mexico. He eventually sued the federal government, reached a settlement, got his record restored, and the government paid his legal fees, but no action was taken to address the corrupt livestock compensation or wolf removal depredation investigation projects. So he tried, but was unsuccessful at getting the agency reformed. Western Watersheds Project did our own investigation of those depredation reports, and we submitted a Freedom of Information Act request. We reviewed hundreds of reports, took about 3 years, and we found that 88% of predation incidents were attributed to Mexican gray wolves on grazing allotments in the Gila and Apache Sitgreaves National Forests. The national average is around 4%. So it's extremely high. And again, this allows ranchers to get money through the Fish and Wildlife Services program, the Livestock Loss Demonstration Project. So there's a lot of money involved. There's a lot of corruption involved. And when federal employees try to do something about it, they get fired.
Yeah, so there's kind of a cover-up, and it sounds like ranchers are getting paid for supposed depredations for animals, for cattle that have really died of natural causes or for some other reason, and that it's just being rubber-stamped and nobody's really overseeing it. Is that an accurate assessment?
I think that's pretty accurate. You know, one of the most egregious examples we saw was a wolf was convicted of killing a bull. And the bull was basically just caught in a juniper tree. There was no bite marks. There was nothing wrong with the bull other than he was stuck in a tree. But that was determined to be a wolf kill with basically no other evidence. So, yeah, there's something wrong.
Yeah. Well, we need to take a short break on Earth Matters here on KURU at 89.1 FM. But we'll be right back to continue our discussion about public lands livestock grazing with Cindy Toole of Western Watersheds Project. Please stay tuned.